Welcome back into another episode of the Dapped on Draft podcast. I am your co-host, Corey Cannon. Alongside of me is Dalton Miller. Today, we're going to review the quarterfinals games that we've had so far. We moved our timeline up one day of reviewing these games, mainly because one of the games won't be played until Thursday night now, unfortunately, due to the tragedy in New Orleans. So we will spend some time talking about the other three quarterfinals games that did happen. But again, Dalton, how has your day of football watching been? Last night of football watching?
Good. My son seemingly got over a sickness and then is immediately sick the next day again. So that's not been great, but he's been super snuggly. So the family has been getting their snuggles in as he has been very tired. I'm trying to keep him like moving around and going and trying to keep him eating, keep his fluids up. But New Year's Day being sick is tough. It was like he was battling an all-time hangover, as a one-year-old and not a 21-year-old. But aside from that, the football watching has been fantastic. Listen, that first game today on New Year's was outstanding. From start to finish, because it didn't start off very hot for Arizona State. But once they got settled in, that was an incredible game, and we're going to talk about it in depth here, but heroic performance, and honestly, one for the ages from Cam Scataboo. So let's get into it, man. But how have you enjoyed your football? Obviously, you've the Ohio State game is still going on right now, but they are up by 20 points early here in the fourth quarter, and it would take a pretty epic collapse to lose this one. So
it would indeed. Good for Oregon for at least fighting back in the second half here a little bit, but you can't drop down 34-0 in the second quarter and expect to put up much of a fight. I've enjoyed it. Again, no daycare on New Year's Day, so having the two kids home has been a little bit limiting of my time and my resources and my energy. And neither of them wanted to really nap today, so just kind of a little bit of a long day in that regard. But I was able to turn on the Arizona State game and obviously the Ohio State game as well. So it's been good. And then I watched all of the Penn State game, which was after bedtime last night for them. So that's great. So it's been nice, man. Not a lot of competitive football outside of the Texas-Arizona State game still in the quarters. We'll see what tomorrow night holds with Notre Dame, Georgia. I think that's going to be a fun defensive game to watch for sure. Some fun defense play. Let's talk about Penn State versus Boise State. Happened on Tuesday night. Penn State pulled away. Boise kind of fought there for a while. They're a very physical football team, and they've proven to be continued to be a well-coached and physical football team. And they were able to punch around a little bit there in the first half into the third quarter a little bit. So that was cool to see that Boise State belonged, I thought. Even though the scoreboard at the end, it didn't look like it, but I thought Boise State belonged for most of that football game. Ashton Ginty just missed Barry Sanders' record as well. He was running in some tough boxes against a really good defensive front in that game.
They were flying. And the one thing I just wanted to point out quickly, I talked about the secondary, specifically the two safeties having to be able to come down and make tackles. And that is the reason why that run defense was able to hold up and give Ashton J&T a lot of problems, was because that secondary tackled last night, because there were multiple opportunities for Ashton J&T to break that big run, and they did not allow that to happen. Now, I don't look too much into the two fumbles from J&T. He was obviously to do a lot. The second fumble was just a perfect punch out. The first one was kind of some poor ball security from him, but a freak bounce of the ball on that first fumble, and being able to keep the feet in on the recovery as well. but he was running into some really tough boxes. And I thought Penn State's defense was flying around in that first half specifically.
Yeah. Yes, they were. Those safeties were coming downhill. The linebackers playing. Abdul Carter left injured, of course, but before he went out, man, they couldn't, of course they couldn't block Abdul Carter. No. I even thought Denied Dennis Sutton had a decent game, and I'm not much of a Denied Dennis Sutton fan. Have you checked out Zane Durant?
No.
A lot? Dude, no. He's wearing 28, which is OA's number when he was at Penn State. And he looks like a very much condensed version of OA, playing defensive tackle he's just stacked out of his mind to another one of those insane Penn State athletes, but he's a fun player to watch. He's extremely explosive and just rocked out of his mind. So that was a fun game. We should talk about Drew Aller. We could talk about Tyler Warren and Nick Singleton all we want as well. Again, their offenses ran through Tyler Warren and Nick Singleton all season long, and that was the case in this one as well. Tyler Warren, just a couple of insane touchdown grabs, including the second one where he went up on the top shelf and reeled it in the back of the end zone. Nick Singleton broke the game open there at the end with that massive run right at the heart. But let's talk a little bit about Drew Aller, because I do think this is the best that he's looked all season. Mm-hmm. On a national stage, like, you could say, well, it's a G4 team still, sure, whatever. It's a playoff game. Nonetheless, it's a playoff game. That first touchdown throw to Tyler Warren was a beautiful football. He was throwing a ton of beautiful deep balls with a lot of touch. I think it was Omari, what's his name? The
number five.
Yeah. Another beautiful ball thrown in the back of the end zone that was dropped.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. The top shelf.
The one dropped top... one. Sorry. I was thinking about the first touchdown that was way downfield that he dropped in the end, an absolute bucket. For the first touchdown.
I mean, he was throwing bucket throws all night, man. Bucket throws all night. He had a few more that are like the ones where he puts steam on and puts velocity on up the hashes can get a little erratic, get a little hospital ball-y, for sure. But as far as this deep ball touch goes in this game, man, he had it. He had it working. Mm-hmm. Just some really nice throws. And it begs the question, like, if this continues and, you know, if he goes into to play Notre Dame or Georgia next week and he does it again against one of those schools, like, what is it going to take for Drew Aller to change his mind?
I think probably winning it all.
The whole thing?
I think so. Especially because Bo already moved on Penn State, left.
Which is a pretty firm commitment on Aller's
which
part.
Which is a pretty good firm commitment on Aller's part. And Aller, again, went to Penn State, partially because he wasn't recruited by Ohio State, but mostly because of James Franklin. And so I don't think you would want to leave Franklin out high and dry. He's also probably taking up most of their NIL money at Penn State at this point. So it's not like he is going to be hurting for cash. And listen, I've seen some people on social media talk about, well, he'd be QB1 in this class. And I don't necessarily disagree that
I don't think I necessarily disagree with it. Yeah,
the problem is I don't think he's been good enough to be QB1 worthy.
No,
this is more on how others feel about Shadur and about Cam, and I think we've kind of made our feelings known about Cam. I think after like the first half of the season, we've been less impressed with Shadur as well. Mm-hmm. But I still think Shadur is QB1 in this class, even if Aller were to declare. Now, when we talk about the entire package with the upside as well, I would not shy away. I would not speak poorly about a team if they drafted Aller above Shadur Sanders. But I don't think he is where I want him to be as an NFL draft prospect yet. And that's why I'm excited that he's going back.
Same. He's on the cusp. Like, you can clearly see the linear growth in his play. Like, even throughout this season, you can see how much better he's getting. And I think it would be a mistake, especially because these guys make so much money at the college level now, to rush that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Andy Koltunecki didn't get the West Virginia job. Like, yes, you were. And we said that Penn State needed to go into the portal and get some freaking wide receivers. And Penn State
they have.
That. And they have
yes,
done
they
that.
Have. Yep.
So, like, he's losing his top two weapons. Probably Nick Singleton could go back. He could.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to think that maybe he might, just because of how many carries he still does not get and that Ka'Tron Allen does. Like,
he's still not going to next year either. And that's just the way that it is. It's so funny how
does that blow your mind that they're giving so much more carries to Ka'Tron Allen over him? Because Ka'Tron runs like a 4.640. Like
he's not a spectacular back. But he's a good running back. Like, Allen is a good back. He's efficient in that offense. What I really noticed from watching a ton of this offense over the past 6 or 7 weeks is that they do a lot of the gadgety stuff with Singleton. They really try to get him outside. It's not the same downhill rushing attack that you get from Allen. And I want to see more of the just natural downhill stuff from Nick Singleton, because then he has those instances where he blows something open like he did in that game last night. But they just kind of use him as a pass catcher. They use him as a pass protector. They run this gadgety stuff with him. They put him in motion. They get him on jet sweeps and stuff like that. I just want them to use him as an actual back the way that they do with Ka'Tron Allen, because they have people in my Discord saying, how is Nick Singleton a better NFL draft prospect than Ka'Tron Allen? Because they see Ka'Tron Allen going for six or 7 yards a pop and running over dudes. Yeah. Well, it's because Ka'Tron Allen is a really good college running back. Mm-hmm. But there's a difference, and it's the same thing with – it's different from Cam Ward being a Saturday player than a Sunday player, because his is kind of the opposite, where he has the athleticism, he has the arm, he has the flashes, but it's the substance that isn't really there. The substance is there with Ka'Tron Allen, but the high-end athleticism that you want to see from an NFL back is not there. I also just don't think you're going to just run right over dudes at the NFL level if you're 230 pounds when you're not unbelievably explosive, which he is not. So Singleton is the better back out of the two from an NFL draft prospect perspective. But like, even if he does go back, I don't think he's going to suddenly be getting 15, 16, 17 carries to Ka'Tron Allen's 10. I still think he's going to catch 5-6 passes a game. He's going to be the pass protector. He's going to get the jet sweep crap. And then Allen's going to get a lot of the more traditional handoffs. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be the way that it is.
I tend to agree. I could see Ka'Tron Allen having like a very nice LeGarrette Blount-ish kind of career in a committee. Yeah. Throughout his NFL career. But he's not. I mean, LeGarrette Blount also ran a 4.740 at the combine. So we're talking about very similar high-end athleticism there. But anything else from that Penn State game you think we need to talk about, other than the Aller, Singleton, Warren? I think we might have sold Warren short just by just like, oh, we talk about all the time. But
yes and no. The one thing that I will say when it comes to Tyler Warren are there are opportunities where I wish that he would finish, and he doesn't. There was one over the middle last night, up high, that it was definitely a high pass, and it was a hospital ball, but I want to see him finish that. There's some plays around the sideline sometimes in contested situations where I want the 260-pounder to finish those, and it just isn't always there. But I had like the same nitpicky critiques with guys like Brock Bowers too. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, Brett tweeted this out or skeeted it out. It wouldn't be crazy if you had a grade higher on Warren than you do Bowers. And I have a grade higher on Warren than I did Bowers. And I thought Bowers was an unbelievably talented player. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about somebody who is probably as explosive as Bowers, maybe not as fluid as Bowers because he's not 235 pounds, but more explosive, if not the same explosiveness. And anybody who tries to tackle him has a bad time. You literally cannot take him down on the first attempt. He won't go down. And in that respect, like, people have asked me, like, is this like a Gronk type comparison? And no, because he's not there as a blocker like Gronk. But his unwillingness, his unwillingness and his linear explosiveness is Gronk-like. Mm-hmm. Nobody is Gronk. But that ability is Gronk-like.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I would tend to agree with that as well. Moving on to Texas, Arizona State. Man, we were texting at the end of this game in overtime, and it's like it was literally like five straight plays of like, that's a guy we talk about a lot on the podcast. That's a guy we talk about a lot on the podcast. Like back-to-back-to-back-to-back-to-back plays where it's like, oh, there's Matthew Golden. There's Gunnar Helm. There's Matthew Golden again. There's Andrew McCubbin ending the game.
Yeah.
It it was just like, oh, there they are. There he is.
There's a bunch of our guys doing it.
Yep. I love Matthew Golden so much. Like, and I know I've been more vocal over the past, like, probably 2 weeks about Matthew Golden, but my goodness, that route he ran on that 4th and 13 on that post was dirty. His stem coming out of that break, man, he leveraged that route so well. And again, you could kind of see it on that first catch and run. He doesn't have the high end breakaway speed. He doesn't have the high end explosiveness, but like all of the small, tiny things that you want a wide receiver to be and a wide receiver to do, Matthew Golden is doing it, man. And like, from the SEC game on, I know he didn't have a big week last week, but I am glad he is in a spotlight and he's like finally the guy, the wide receiver at Texas that people are noticing, mainly because Isaiah Bond is just not getting looks.
He's MIA.
He's MIA. Yeah.
I didn't even know he was playing until the interception. Didn't even know he was playing until Quinn Ewers threw another interception his way, which happened in the Georgia game. It was the only time I saw him in the Georgia game.
Like, do we think Isaiah Bond's going back to school? And if he does, do we think he's transferring again?
I don't know what else you do. I don't know what else you do.
I don't know if Texas wants him back. Like, I don't know if Texas would want him back.
He's been non-existent the whole back half of the year. I loved his tape, man. I loved even the first couple of weeks of the season. But since the ankle injury, he's been a complete non-factor. Mm-hmm. Complete non-factor in that offense. I think he's got to go back. But we're here to talk about good stuff.
Yes.
Cam's got to boom, man. Good Lord. Talk about a football player putting the team on his back. Throwing up on the sideline. Visibly shaken when he was taking the field every single time. And he just gutted out a performance for the ages. For the ages. I was so, so sad that they lost that football game. Mm-hmm.
Only on a bad defensive call, man. On a bad defensive play call, too.
It was textbook targeting. And listen, I understand that Scatabu pushed off like crazy on the deep ball as well. That was later. Mm-hmm. I understand he pushed off there. Always OPI every single time. I'm team OPI.
Oh, yeah.
If you can get away with it, get away with it. They call it defensive pass interference, which I thought was funny. But that was textbook targeting. It went to a review. I don't know how you mess that up. And I don't know how you apologize for it. And listen, do they go down and make that field goal to win the game? Probably not, because they had one of the worst kicking situations in college football this year. But they didn't get the opportunity. Mm-hmm. To win the game in regulation. And that's the unfortunate part about it. That said, the fourth down call is the reason why they lost that football game.
Yes.
Great, great route by Golden. But I've seen this time and time and time and time again in the NFL, in college football, in high school football. Defensive coordinators let their emotions get the best of them. And they all of a sudden want to send pressure on 4th and 12 instead of just freaking playing coverage and making a quarterback think.
A quarterback who doesn't want to think. Yeah, exactly.
A quarterback who needs things dictated to him in that offense to consistently be successful. So, good gosh, why are we blitzing Quinn Ewers in that situation? If you don't get home, someone is running free. And that's exactly what happened. But I'm absolutely gutted for Scatabue, man. I've never seen a singular human being, person, player, deserve to win a football game more than he deserved to win that football game.
Yeah. 143 yards, 2 touchdowns on the ground, 8 catches, 99 yards as a receiver out of the backfield.
And he threw a touchdown. And he was sick.
He could not have done anything else. Unbelievable. No.
And shout out to Makuba again, flying around all game.
Yep. He made an impressive opening field tackle on Scatabu too, where he grabbed him by the foot and ripped foot out from underneath of him. Just his ability to stick his nose in and play as physical he does in that frame is one of the more impressive things, because that dude is rail thin.
Yeah, I have no clue how he's 190 pounds. It would honestly shock me if that's what he weighed in at the combine, because he looks like he's 175 pounds out there.
Yeah.
Alfred Collins, I thought, just from the live viewing, looked really good on the interior. Again, he's a run defender. It's what he does. Arizona State runs a ton of duo, so it kind of takes him out of it a little bit, which is what they want to do. But I thought overall this was obviously the most competitive game, but it was fun to watch the ebbs and flows of that Arizona State defense get absolutely murdered on the first two offensive drives and then really settle in against that Texas offense. It was a really fun game.
It was indeed. As far as our guys that we talked a lot about, Matthew Golden, 7 catches, 149 yards and a touchdown. Gunnar Helm, 3 catches, 56 yards and a touchdown. So a good day for our brand as well. I'm very
two-point conversion.
Oh, yeah.
And the third.
That was an unbelievable catch by Matthew Golden on that two-point conversion as well, because he had to control his body, come back onto a ball, leveraged way inside on his from where he was running his route. I'm really intrigued by Sam Levitt heading into summer scouting in May, because that kid has an elastic arm and he can freaking run.
Agent of chaos. Oh, yes. My God, is he fun to watch.
Yes,
he is. He's got to settle in. He's got the quarterback arm, it is
elastic, dude. He can sling that thing.
So he's doing stuff that a lot of people are really excited about with Nussmeier, where like he'll roll out to his left and be fading away and then like throw, you know, sidearm across his body. Like he can do that kind of stuff. And I believe it was the 2-point conversion. Where he ran around for legitimately like 17 seconds, making guys miss. And then eventually there was a defensive holding in the end zone. But my gosh, really athletic. Like you said, great arm. Learn how to play quarterback, young man. You could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. And the thing is, he's a sophomore. So
yeah,
he might be a redshirt freshman, actually.
I think he is a redshirt freshman.
He's a redshirt freshman. So Michigan State transfer. So he's got some time to learn. Moving on to the Ohio State-Oregon game. This game was 34-0 with 8 minutes left in the second quarter.
Before we do anything else, you gotta wave the kid into the NFL draft. You just have to. What the fuck else does he have to prove at this point?
He's the best wide receiver in college football.
Easily. It's not even close. He's better than Marvin. I think he might be better right now than Marvin Harrison Jr. was.
6'3", 220, dude. Like this, like his first touchdown was 40 yards after the catch, breaking a tackle in the open field. His second one was a deep ball down the field. The dude was making body control catches along the boundary all day. He dropped 200 yards in the Rose Bowl as a true freshman.
He's unstoppable. Will Howard can literally just chuck the ball up to him and he will go and get it.
He'll go get it.
He had a flag. There was a flag route that he ran where he elevated over both. And I know Oregon's corners aren't like 6'3 this year like they usually are, but he elevated over two guys who were sandwiching him, contacting him, and he just finished like it was absolutely nothing. He is one of the most physically gifted players I've seen in my lifetime. There's nothing else nothing else he has to prove.
No. Like, should he play next year?
No, he shouldn't play the next 2 years. But, yeah, like, I take that back. I think he should play next year.
But then Jamar Chase it.
And then Jamar Chase it. And that was obviously different because it was during COVID. But,
right.
There's no way I'm risking an Achilles tear or an ACL my junior year. No shot.
Yeah, so we had a dafter draft about this. If the committee should, if they should change the rules to where underclassmen can submit paperwork to the committee, that juniors tend to do, and they hope to get a grade back, and it helps them make a decision. And that if the committee gave them a first round grade, they should be able to declare. Like I said back then, and I stick with it. I don't think we're far away from that. I mean, these kids are already making millions of dollars. So like, what's the difference? What's the difference? And again, you mentioned like the body development aspects of it. And I think that would play in part into the committee's decisions. Like Dylan Raiola is still kind of small. Ryan Williams is still very small. Like that would weigh into those decisions. But like, and how many players would it add to a draft class per year? Like this is an extreme case because like there are a lot of really good true freshmen. Like Dylan Stewart, man. Dylan Stewart. Peter Woods is a sophomore.
Maybe.
Peter Woods would probably. Caleb Downs would get waivered. There's some guys that might get waivered in. But this is an extreme year where, like, we could talk maybe four, like, almost a handful of guys. Yeah. That's not going to be the case year in, year out. Maybe Lagway. But Lagway has a handful of starts to his name. I don't think they'd give him a first-round grade on a handful of starts. So, like, I don't think we're far off from this because it's not changing the landscape much at all to do it. Like, it's not changing the landscape at all to do it, to be honest. You're adding three or four more names to the NFL draft every year. Maybe. Yeah. But in this game, some NFL draft prospects to talk about that aren't Jeremiah Smith because he's not one. This is the best football Trey Henderson's played since his freshman year of college.
Yeah.
He's two weeks in a row now. He's looked unbelievably explosive, elusive. Catches the ball really well out of the backfield. Had three catches for 20 yards today. Had a massive 70-yard run and that really busted this. I mean, the game was already busted open, but
that really like 34-0.
Yeah, that really added to it as well. 91 yards on 7 carries, 2 touchdowns in this game, man. Like, and again, as you have mentioned, this is a very good pass pro class. Running backs who are not afraid to throw their bodies around, and he might be the best one in the class at it as well. So like. Now, of course, the hairline fracture still has to check out. That was what that derailed his sophomore season. And he built back last year, but I still didn't think he was quite there last year. But he looks at this year. We're the top four back, top three back. Where does he fit for you with Omarion Hampton?
He's fifth for me.
So Janty, Johnson, Singleton, Hampton, Henderson?
Yeah. Yes. And Singleton and Hampton, tags are now touching.
Nice.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, he's put together, especially down the stretch here, a really impressive body of work. Really impressive body of work. I mean, Will Howard's going to get a Senior Bowl invite. He just threw for 319, 3 Bills in this game. Had his two best career games were Tennessee and Oregon.
Yeah. And I mean, can we talk about that? Because Howard is somebody that we were somewhat excited about coming to Ohio State because we like the body. The arm's not amazing,
not right.
But dude,
he's throwing with some accuracy.
Two weeks in a row now, over the top, over the middle, in a bucket.
Egbuka over three defenders, where he literally had the defender with his back turned. He hit it off the back of that defender's hand, who's just trying to play Egbuka's hands.
Yeah,
right into the bucket, man. Like,
and he had a throw like that to Egbuka last week too. And look at all of these throws that he is making. Because, listen, Jeremiah Smith is obviously transcendent, but these are good balls.
And Egbuka's
thrown, like, leveraged away tracking from defenders. Like, Howard looks really good when he is able to sit back and actually deliver.
Yeah. But I think I said this on this podcast. Like, he reminds me a lot of, like, what Sam Ellinger was doing at Texas.
Yes.
Was last year. Like, Sam Ellinger at Texas, kind of the similar arm strength, similar body types. Ellinger, a better athlete. But, I mean, Howard's not a bad athlete.
Not by much. No. Yeah, not by much. And he's a big dude. And I actually like his throwing motion and his arm more than Ellinger as well. Yeah. So, like, you're looking at somebody who, late round guy, might stick around for a little while. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Mickey Egbuka is the other defensive the other draftable prospect on the offensive side of the ball to talk about here.
He should be wide receiver 3 and no lower than that, in my opinion.
He is wide receiver 3 for me as well.
He should be for the NFL as well.
2 weeks in a row, man. Body control, ball tracking, just unbelievably stellar. I mean, he caught that one against Tennessee last week with hands in his face. Like, he tracked that thing through some hands. This week, literally a hand on the football as he's tracking that thing over three defenders and reels that in for a touchdown in this game as well. You mentioned it, I think it was last week, that he's pretty much a JSN regen. And it makes a lot more sense to me as well. Like, he's not a high-end athlete. But again, similar to Matthew Golden, he's doing all the little things really, really well. And I even think he's a better ball tracker than Matthew Golden. He can do a little bit more yak wise than Matthew Golden as well, because he's a little more fluid in the open field, but where Matthew Golden's more sudden. Like, to me, this is like going back to the 2022 class where people were debating Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. Chris Olave was so much more smooth, but Garrett Wilson was so much more sudden. And that's kind of how, like, if we're going to compare Golden and Igbuka, Igbuka is so much more fluid. He's so fluid. Yeah, man. Quinshon Judkins as well, 17 catches, 85 yards. Defensively, man, we mentioned this in the last episode. Jack Sawyer has a knack for getting his hands on the football, and he knocked down two more passes.
TJ Watt thing to him.
Yeah, he's got it. He's got it down, man. I still question his ceiling as an NFL pass rusher, but I don't question his floor because he's strong at the point of attack. He's got 32-inch arms, so he's not super long, but he does have power in his hands, and he can work through the chest pretty well. So I think he has kind of a high floor, and he wouldn't, it wouldn't shock me if he becomes one of those like hybrid Sam-ish pass rushers, kind of like an Anthony Jennings, although Anthony Jennings has a lot more length than what Jack Sawyer has, or like one of those Baltimore rotational edge rushers who becomes a full-time edge rusher on a second deal where he signs elsewhere, because Baltimore can just draft rotational edge rushers like crazy, like Za'Darius Smith or Tyus Bowser or Matthew Judon, like one of those kinds of players. It wouldn't shock me if Jack Sawyer kind of fit into that kind of role at the NFL level.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't for me either. You know, he kind of seems like that quintessential guy who is going to go, you know, round three, maybe
go top 50, man. Maybe somebody might bite top 50.
Top 50.
I would
such
do
a
it.
Good edge class.
It is. I wouldn't do it, but like his floor is really high.
Yeah,
he's got a pretty high floor.
I think if you're talking about a team that already has two starters and just wants a really solid rotational piece and has the freedom to take that in round two, you know, late in round two, then maybe. But for me, man, I look at him more as a round three guy.
He's very stiff. No bend to his game whatsoever. Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, just like you said, solid football player overall. That interior has been really good, especially since the Michigan game with Ty Leak and Ty Hamilton, man. And Hamilton is a day three guy for me. But when you're talking about four NFL players on the defensive front, and then dude Sonny was flying around the field.
I'm telling you, dude, early he was not game. 19 and wasn't in any rush to go back. And he's from Columbus. Like, he's not in any rush to leave home. And again, he's only 19 because he reclassified. There would be a strong conversation up there with him and Jahad Campbell and Jalen Walker about, is he in that tier? Because I mean, a converted safety at 6'3", 230, he's a big freaking dude. Mm-hmm. And he's athletic enough to play on the back end because he was a safety. Like, we would be having conversations if he had decided to come out.
And dude, just overall, shout out to Ohio State, because this is why everybody went back.
Mm-hmm.
This is why their defense looks the way it did. It's Caleb Downs, and who was the other transfer that they are starting that is like in year two with the team?
Davis and Igbinosin.
Is that Igbinosin who was the transfer? Okay, so it's those two, and the rest have been on that team for three or four years, some of them five.
Yeah. Lathan Ransom is a fifth year guy, and he was flying. He was an all-time crash dummy tonight.
He always flies around. And that's why people like him a lot. Because they like those crash dummy safeties. But
to your point, like Jack Sawyer, JTT, Tyleek Williams, Denzel Burke,
all
2021 highly recruited 2021 guys who said we're all going back to do this thing. So like
And it looks like they're doing the damn thing. I can't. If they play anywhere near the way that they played today, and we talked about this on Dapper Draft. We think whoever won that game was going to. I didn't expect it to be like this, man. I didn't expect Ohio State to look this good. And, you know, Penn State looked pretty good. We'll see what happens with Notre Dame and Georgia, but I can't imagine any of those two teams are going to impress me the way that Ohio State impressed me today.
No, because it's one thing. Well, it's not even one thing to say but this about Tennessee, because Tennessee has a really good defensive interior with Omari Thomas and Omar Norman Lott and those guys. But like the biggest question mark was like they duct tape they've duct taped their interior offensive line together. Mm-hmm. And they're blowing dudes off the ball 2 weeks in a row. And we're talking about draftable players, Omari Thomas, Omar Norman Lott, Derek Harmon, who's potentially going to go in the first round, Jamari Campbell, one of the best, or Jamari Caldwell, one of the best nose tackles in college football. Like
Jordan Burch is 290 pounds on the edge.
And they're moving dudes off the ball. I don't know what clicked for those young guys who aren't supposed to be playing right now, but something clicked and they are moving bodies.
What clicked is they're all 4 or 5 stars who just had to get some playing time.
That's fair. And they're playing really pissed off after that Michigan game for sure,
too. Yeah.
But now, you know, speaking of one of the best nose tackles in college football, they probably got the best nose tackle in college football next week. So with Alfred Collins. So we'll see if they can continue to move that Texas or defensive line around. As well, but that's been the biggest wild card for me. It's like I didn't expect that interior offensive line to do what they're doing. I don't know if anybody expected that interior offensive line to do what they're doing right now. They rushed for what 160 yards, 176, 175 yards today on 24 carries. Like, that's unbelievable. So they look very hard to beat. Mm-hmm. They look very hard to beat in back to back weeks now. So, yeah. And then again, of course, we don't have the Notre Dame Georgia game to talk about. So we'll hit on that a little bit before we get into our 16-20 tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow it'll be done by the time we record tomorrow. So because it's
got 4:30 game tomorrow. Yeah.
So we'll talk a little bit about that game tomorrow, which is going to be a really physical defensive game as well. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Just two defenses that'll look to beat the crap out of you. So we'll get back and talk a little bit more about that game. Anything else from these games? We didn't really talk about a whole lot of Oregon players, but Evan Stewart didn't have a catch. Tez Johnson had 5 for 32. So
yeah,
Jordan James 7 carries for 14 yards. Dylan Gabriel's stat box score looks a little bit nicer than what he actually played because he looked very frantic.
Yes.
In the majority of that game to finish for 29 of 41 for 299 and 2 touchdowns. But so not a whole lot from the Oregon side to really talk about in this game.
No. Nope, I'm good to go.
All right. Well, that has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Again, tomorrow we're talking 16 through 20 on our big boards. So we're doing the dang thing. Enjoy Notre Dame, Georgia. And until tomorrow, I'm Corey. Let's go.